Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
What a beautiful day to settle back and listen to some UK sports conversation for the next hour right here on the Leach Report. Happy to have you on board with us today as we're going to hear a little bit from Mark Stoops at the kickoff luncheon yesterday for the UK Louisville Alumni Club. Today, the annual kickoff luncheon in Lexington takes place. So this is what Coach Stoops has referred to as talking season. And it'll continue for just a little while longer, and then they'll actually start practicing next week. Fan days a week from this Saturday, so make sure you have that on your calendar. And we will talk about that topic and others today with our lineup of guests, which is always presented by Sleep Outfitters. That's Dick Gabriel to lead us off, Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, and we'll finish up today with Mike Pratt and with the UK trip to the Bahamas coming up. They leave a week from Monday. There's a lot to talk about with Mike, who's seen some practices, and we'll get some of his observations on those. I would think here soon they will commence with the more serious practices that they get to do in advance of a foreign trip, the trips they get to take every 4 years. I think it's 10 days of practice that you get. They'll probably have a couple of days at least down in the Bahamas that will be part of that total. But I would think they're limited on what they can do this time of year. I watched a little bit of yesterday's workout, but they'll get into more rigorous practices next week in advance of that Bahamas trip. Let's get to our Wildcat News of the Day, and that's the service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And we'll lead off with Mark Stoops talking yesterday in Louisville about expectations for his Kentucky football team this season.
The expectations is to constantly improve, and we're proud of the work that we've done the past couple of years, and quite frankly, the work we've done in the 5 years we've been here. We've done a lot and improved a lot and gotten a lot better in many different facets of the program, and we look to continue to do that, and we expect to do that.
That was Stoops yesterday, prior to his address to the alumni folks in a meeting with the media. The coordinators on the offensive side, Eddie Grant, on the defense side, Matt House, were both there as well, as they will all be at the kickoff luncheon here in Lexington today. Obviously, quarterbacks are a big topic of conversation right now for the Big Blue Nation. Sure, for the coaches, too. They don't want to talk about it a lot publicly because there's nothing to say right now. Nobody's taken control of the job yet. It didn't happen through spring. I think they feel that they have guys they can win with. They have what they need, but they want somebody, ideally, to assert himself to be the clear leader. If not, then who knows? Maybe they will go into the season with a two-quarterback deal. But Eddie Grant yesterday talked about that taking control, what that might look like.
Well, it's just clear cut. Is that going to happen? It didn't happen in the spring, and they're both a little bit different, you'd like to see somebody rise, right, somewhere down the road, whether it be in the first 29 practices, whether it be by game three, or game six, somebody's going to have to take this thing and go with it. So you love that competition, but that's everywhere. Left tackle, our center, our right guard, it's competition,
That was Eddie Grant yesterday. One other piece of news that came out of this from Coach Stoops, Josh Pascal has an issue with a foot that needs a minor operation. They expect him to be back for the September 1st opener. Not guaranteed, but they're optimistic he'll be back by the opener. But obviously he's going to miss a lot of reps in the training camp that is coming up. But Stoops did say it is, quote, nothing that should linger. So that's good. A few other pieces of Wildcat news. Hamidou Diallo signs a 3-year deal with Oklahoma City, $4 million. So happy for Hami. Gives him some security. Khalil Whitney put out a tweet that said the end is near. And given that he is making an official visit to Kentucky next week, I think a lot of folks are anticipating that a commitment, if it didn't come that weekend, will come soon thereafter. And the new head coach at Evansville is Walter McCarty, the former Wildcat. And he apparently told a group of Evansville fans that the Aces are going to play a game at Kentucky in the 2020 season. The schedule for the upcoming season ought to be coming out here before too long. We know what a lot of the non-conference games looks like. What it always is the holdup is the conference schedule and getting that from the league office. But usually around the early part of August, I think, is when that comes out. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We are heading to a break. Dick Gabriel joins the program to lead us off when we come right back. You can tweet us at Leach Report. You can email leachreport at gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080, and we'll be right back.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Quarter past the top of the hour, as we welcome in Dick Gabriel. You'll hear him on the sidelines reporting on the Wildcats with us on our UK football broadcast again this fall. And you can hear him on our flagship station here in Lexington with the Big Blue Insider Show weeknights. Gabe, we'll start with a little football. Mark Stoops at the kickoff luncheon in Louisville yesterday for the alumni. There's one in Lexington today. So anything that you're hearing coming out of the UK football camp that is particularly encouraging or concerning?
Well, I didn't like the news that Josh Pascal is injured. That's going to set him back because, in my mind, he is going to be one of the biggest keys to their success this season overall. Because when, you know, doing research for the upcoming season and looking back on last year, it was amazing to me, Tom, that they won seven games and then should have won 9 or 10, just given the fact that the defense just gave up so much yardage, but on the other hand, made a lot of big plays when it had to. And I firmly believe that all goes back to the interior line, or just to the defensive line in general. And Pascal showed signs of real brilliance last year, and when they changed his role and put more on him this year, I think that was a big move. So to not have him for the full preseason is going to set him back some. You know, I mean, I think he'll be fine eventually, but they have got to be better up front defensively, or they won't keep making the progress they've made under Stoops. But I think if Pascal's okay, and I'm so high on Quentin Bohannon, I think they got a real chance to do that.
And it seemed like they have more depth up there than they've had in a while, that they feel confident.
Yeah.
That they trust.
Yeah, and they've got more people. You know, now they got to go out and play. You know, but you're right; they've got the opportunity to take advantage, you know, of the recruiting they've done and things like that. But without those interior guys, you know, Josh Allen's going to keep getting those double teams that he got last year.
What's your sense of what the expectation is for the majority, say, of the fan base for this team?
Oh, I think they absolutely want to see that next move up into the 8 or 9. Victory tier and the better bowl game. There's no question. Although I think they've looked at the schedule and realized that, you know, there are some bigger challenges. Well, we say that every year. I can only remember one year. That was maybe 3 years ago when the schedule set up, when they had the 8 home games and all that stuff and missed some opportunities. But, you know, it's going to be tough to beat Florida, you know, on the road. They've had 2 or 3 opportunities to beat the Gators. Really had them last year and just gave it away. But it's always tough, of course, when you go on the road in the league. It's going to be tougher at Tennessee with a new head coach, and, you know, you're in Knoxville and all that stuff. So, you know, it's going to be tough with Louisville. So, but I think fans absolutely want to see that step that they just haven't been able to break through in a long, long time. Even under Rich Brooks, you know, they had a hard time, you know, getting to that next level. I think that's what they want to see.
Anybody that would be at the top of your list of players that you think could make a significant impact this season that have not made a big impact up to this point? Because certainly it could be a freshman,
a guy who's played but hadn't done much. Yeah. Well, I don't know if this falls into your category, but he didn't play last year, and that's Dorian Baker.
You
know, obviously out with the injury, but you know how we talk a lot on and off the air about the fact that they really missed Jeff Badette last year because he stretched that field better than anybody they've had in a long time and made Garrett Johnson more effective and more dangerous. And, you know, I don't know that Dorian has the deep threat capability, but he's so big, and, you know, he has, even though he had some drops in his career, he made some big catches, but I do think they missed him last year. So I think that that he could be big, you know, and I think, you know, Taven Richardson, you go back and look at some of the things he did. You know, he was good here and there, but I think he's a guy who could really, especially with the return of Dorian Baker, help them. And if you recall, Tom, they were throwing to him on the last play of the season, basically. So I think those two guys could really team up to have a profound effect on the offense.
Yeah, I can see Taven having a real breakout year off really that bowl game as much as anything, not just at the end, but he had a couple of big catches. Let's shift gears to a basketball topic, and it's one of those fun summer things that Mark Story has tapped into that we can all have some fun with. Mark's going to join us on Monday when he gets back from vacation. I think his countdown of the top 50 of his top 50 greatest Kentucky basketball wins is going to culminate on Friday, I think, is what he told me. So the latest one goes through 21, so we're about to see the top 20. Let's talk about games that you know you think are sure to be in the top five. The first one that comes to my list that I'd be shocked if it's not in the top five is the 75 win over Indiana when Indiana was undefeated.
Yeah, and I was actually at that game. I was covering it for the school paper for the Colonel, and it was I went and I thought, well, the season will likely end here because of what had happened in Bloomington earlier that season. But, it was one of the great shocks. And I got to be honest with you, Tom, that tested every ounce of my ability to keep from, jumping up and down because it was such a thrill. But it's a good lesson for a young journalist how to just try to be as objective as you can and cover. But I was so happy for those guys, because I'd covered them all year. And they were coming off a 13-13 year. And Joe B was under fire, and the Bob Knight tapping that back of the head incident and all that stuff came together. So, there aren't many shocking upsets in the history of Kentucky basketball, as you well know, but that was certainly one of them.
What are some any others that come to mind that you think would be sure to be, say, in Mark's top five?
Well, I don't know. Is he going with wins or games?
Games, yeah. Just I think it's. Let me go back. I think it is wins. But yeah, I know if you're talking about games, you might throw in the 92 Duke game. But I think it'll all be wins. It is talked about magnitude. It's not just just winning a title is it's beyond that. It's how compelling the game was, comebacks, noteworthy achievements, etc. Wins. It is wins.
All right, well, if it's, and I've been looking at them, I just couldn't remember, but because you've got to throw the Leitner game in there, but minus that, I think some of the other ones. I'll tell you one, Tom, I don't know if it'll get much play, but the upset of LSU with Shaquille O'Neal and Stanley Roberts in Patino's first year.
I think that could be there, yeah.
Is, if that's not a signature win for Rick Pitino and just his first year, I don't know what is. I mean, that had it all. You had Goliath coming in,
that was,
Dale Brown.
Yeah. A team that really fans embraced.
Yeah, and as Shaquille O'Neal to this day will tell you the best big man he ever faced was Stanley Roberts in practice at LSU. Yeah. And for them to beat that team was just unbelievable. And the entertaining way they did it, I thought, was just incredible. So, it's just said a lot
about 14-14 season, that you could have a top five win in there from a 14-14 season. I think
that's something. I really think that Patino's best coaching was the first 2 years he was at Kentucky. Now, he had to do a different kind of coaching once his rosters got more talented. But, man, to coax the wins and the best record in the SEC the following year out of those guys, I thought was just remarkable.
And the win, the 2014 team beating the undefeated Wichita State team. I don't know
that's a great one. What about the win over Ohio State and North Carolina in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, the Ohio State one especially, I think.
Yeah.
Gabe, appreciate the time. We'll talk more as we get closer to football. Thank you.
All right, buddy. See you.
At Big Blue Insider 1 on Twitter for Dick Gabriel. Quick break. Back with Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated on the Leach Report.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Justin Rowland joins us from Cats Illustrated to talk. We'll start with a little UK football because you guys, Justin, at the site are doing a series of staff roundtable stories on different topics related to the upcoming football season. The latest one is particularly pertinent because of the news yesterday about Josh Pascal having a little setback, and it's about how much improvement can be expected from the defensive line, because I think we would both be on the same page in saying that's the thing that's got to happen for Kentucky to really elevate its defensive play overall.
Yep, I think you're right about that. And, you know, certainly with Pascal missing part of camp, you know, that's not going to help. He's really one of the main reasons you think that they could get more of an organic kind of natural pass rush from up front. Just he's that kind of explosive athlete. The big thing for him is, I think, whether he's going to be ready for Florida. They need him going into the swamp to provide some pressure. Otherwise, that one's going to be tough. But I think they've got a lot of guys that could take that next step on the defensive line, and I'm kind of quietly optimistic about them.
Any one that is ahead of the that you would think would be ahead of the others in terms of potential for impact?
You know, I think
outside of Josh, certainly.
Yeah. Well, they talked a lot about Phil Hoskins. I think T.J. Carter. I kind of classed him as like a post-hype sleeper. We like to talk about the stars. We like to talk about the freshmen who could be stars. But T.J. Carter went into last season after a better-than-expected freshman year, and I think we were all expecting him to take the next step. But sometimes, you know, progress either isn't linear or it just comes one year a little bit later than we expected. And I think Carter is maybe somebody who maybe we're not talking about quite as much, but Stoops still seems to think he's got a lot of good left in him.
He had a really good bowl game against Georgia Tech in a – I think that's where a lot of that optimism came from, and yeah, just didn't have that big splash last season. One of the other topics you guys touched on, or a couple of them actually, kind of go hand in hand, reasons for optimism, things to be concerned about. I think you focused on the concerns just on the offense at this point, but what's at the about a minute here before we get to a break, what are the top-of-the-list items in those categories?
I think the obvious and variations of what we all said for the optimism was you got a foundation with Benny Snell on that offensive line and physical blocking tight ends. They do have to get more balance and improve the passing game, but you've got something that you can go to and the going gets tough, a back that could rush for 1,500 yards. And then the concerns were all related to either uncertainty at quarterback, how they're going to have ball control, and the receiver position not being quite proven enough. So pretty much what most people would probably say.
If you follow Pro Football Focus, the college part of that on Twitter, they just put out a tweet today. It says, among returning SEC running backs, it says, all are looking up at Benny Snell in terms of most missed tackles forced on the ground. That probably surprises nobody that he's the leader. Damian Harris and Aris Williams from Mississippi State tied for second among the returnees. We're out for the first half. More with Justin Rowland when we come right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Back with Justin Roller from CatsIllustrated.com. I want to get to a basketball topic that you guys have gotten into at the site at CatsIllustrated.com, Justin, about a piece on the UK front court, using some analytics and talking about how Kentucky might look this season. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, this year's team is obviously super intriguing because there's so many new faces and you add the graduate transfer and they're so deep, and it's like, what do you talk about when there are 20 things you could talk about? I think the biggest thing, the most defining thing about this team is going to be how PJ Washington and Reed Travis play together and what those two can do to just beat up opponents right around the basket. And, you know, I think They're very similar players in some respects. I think Travis's years of polish are evident in terms of some of the things he does. But the way that he works around the basket, the fact that, that PJ, and the numbers support this, like PJ last year, I want to say he took 12 shots outside of the paint from February 1st through the end of the season, 95 shots at the rim. Those two are going to play off each other, I think, together extremely well, and it'd be very tough to take away what those two do because they score in such a variety of ways. They're very diversified offensive players, so I just think that's going to be something really intriguing to see.
Yeah, I think we'll see a much different ratio for PJ this season.
Yeah, there's going to be a balance because both of these guys need to show that they can stretch a defense, they can get out away from the basket. It's natural that you think they would improve on those things, but, you know, what are they going to do at the beginning of the season and what are they going to settle into? What roles are they going to settle into? It always happens with Calipari once February and March come around. That'll be interesting as well.
There will be so much focus on who starts. It's just kind of a natural thing for fans. But I think even more intriguing will be who is Cal most confident in at the end of games, and does that change from game to game?
You know, I think PJ improved as a defender last season. I think Travis was a much more efficient offensive player than a defensive player. I compared Travis in some respects to Bam Adebayo, and offensively, their efficiency is pretty comparable. Defensively, Adebayo, and I'm using Adebayo because he's the last guy who would really move guys around down low on both ends for Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Adebayo ranked in the top 10% of defenders nationally, according to the analytics, and Travis really just in the top 50%. He's good at defending the pick and roll, but he was honestly kind of mediocre defending isolation and defending the ball away from the basket. And so I think there's going to be a real strong pull to have Richards or Montgomery on the court because I think they'll make Kentucky better defensively this year.
I'm guessing there probably won't be as much talk or certainly as much use as of zone as we saw last season.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I think, you know, aside from the fact that when you've got Travis and Washington on the floor together, I'm not sure what the shot blocking looks like between those two. I'm not sure what the rim protection looks like. I don't want to call them below-the-rim players, but they're not like the traditional Calipari shot blocking types. That would be really my only concern. I mean, these guys are going to get after it on the perimeter, and they've still got length. I mean, not as much length as last year, but definitely probably more man-to-man this season, I would imagine.
You know, if I'm Nick Richards, I'm thinking that could be my entree to more minutes, is to be more of a shot blocker because the other guys, that is not as much of what they do.
Yep, and Montgomery, too. So while I do think that Travis and Washington, it's super interesting to think about because of I just think both of those guys, you put them around the basket together, and what they do in isolation settings is almost unstoppable, and how they finish off of boards and how they're going to offensive rebound together. If you have Richards and Montgomery off the floor, you know, time is going to tell how Kentucky fares defensively because it's not a throwback Calipari rim protection group back there with Travis and Washington.
Back to football, and I'll ask you this question now, and then we'll probably get to it again towards the end of training camp once you start to hear things about how guys have looked in practices. But at this point, any names that you would throw out of guys that fans should keep an eye on that they either haven't heard it much at all in the past, maybe a red shirt or a true freshman, or guys that just didn't play a whole lot but could now be more of a greater role?
Yeah. One would be Jordan Griffin. Kind of like TJ Carter, we had high expectations for Griffin last season because he came with a good prospect pedigree, and we forget he's a four-star recruit. Other schools in the SEC were pursuing him right up until the end, and he's going to be, I want to say, a junior this season, and he's gotten kind of sparing playing time, but he's a very talented kid, very versatile kid in the secondary. He's going to need to maybe be the leader of the secondary in 2019. I think he's going to play a lot. It's such a senior-laden secondary, it's been tough to get on the field, but I think Griffin could be in line for a big season, and a little bit off the radar, Tyrell Eugene, along with Devontae Robinson, I'm interested in that next wave of defensive backs because they're going to have to replace five senior starters after 2018. Those guys are going to have to play to get ready this year.
What about on the recruiting front for football? Any news that's happening?
It's really been a lull. It's been a dead period. Coaches have been on vacation. They I don't think that official visits can start up again until September when the season is here. But there's going to be a next round of guys making decisions before too long. Defensive tackle Isaiah Gibson, Kentucky's in his top five. He's going to decide next month. I don't think we're far away from Wandale Robinson, J.J. Weaver, Shonkel, Mike Goff, these in-state kids maybe making a decision soon. Wandale Robinson could be the next to pop because he's made a commitment video, and I think Kentucky's probably in good shape with him.
Huh? Well, that's good to hear. Justin, I appreciate the time, and always we'll talk next Thursday.
Thanks a lot.
It's Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com. His weekly visits to the show are presented by our friends at Shuffle Bean Coffee. We are heading to a break. When we come back, Mike Pratt joins the program here on the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
Welcome back into our Thursday edition of the Leach Report as we welcome in Mike Pratt. His weekly visits brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. You can check them out at boonesbutchershop.com, and you can follow Mike on Twitter at MikePratt22. And we'll soon be talking down in the Bahamas. I guess in 2 weeks we'll be there. Kentucky will have played a game, but I know you've seen one or two practices to this point. Just tell me a little bit about overall what has been your impression of what you've seen.
Tom, I'm excited. I think I mentioned it to you last show. The potential for this team is special, and they've got, it looks like, the right blend of guys that can be moved around in different positions to give you different looks. He can go small, he can go big, and I think he's got enough shooters where the last few years we haven't had enough, or what we've had has been streaky. Malik was awfully good shooter, but everybody else seemed to be a perimeter, very streaky. Derek Willis, Fox were all streaky. I mean, they got hot from time to time, but I think he's got some guys that he's got a handful, four or five guys that can sit out there and knock things down. He's got enough guys slicing to the basket. You know, I just Johnson's a slasher. Montgomery was impressive, and the guy from Stanford, Reed, was. They all were impressive. Quade looked very good. He was very much in command that day. I was up there very much.
That's good to hear because you know, he was a fun guy to be around last year, but it sounds like if he just is a good thing.
Yeah, you know, you and I, we really enjoyed him, as you said, and you could see where at times his confidence, typical freshman, waned, and other times, boy, he was full of himself. He made things happen. It was just, it was kind of like he was looking to Cal to help build his confidence, and Cal's looking at him and said, hey, if you play, you're going to build your own confidence. You don't need me to help you. You go out there and get something done, and that's how your confidence is going to be built. And a lot of freshmen, that's the way they are, Tom. And I look for big things from Quad A this year.
And last week, I know you. We talked about this just a little bit. I think you'd just seen him. And Kelda Johnson was one guy you singled out. Talk with his coach up at Oak Hill, Steve Smith, who just couldn't stop laying on the praise with Keldon, and he talked about what a hard worker he was, and it sounded like you saw that in practice.
He got after everybody he guarded. He guarded multiple people while I was there. He was aggressive. He was hard charging on everybody. It looked like he took pleasure in defending. You know, he challenged those guys, and that's I really liked that. And of course, you know, Steve Smith, the legendary coach up there at Oak Hill, he's seen a lot of players.
Yeah.
And if he starts talking about this young fellow that way, then it gets my attention because you have to have great respect for what Steve Smith has done up there. So one day of practice, I was very impressed with the way he approached the job he had to do playing basketball in that practice session. The other thing I think stood out in my mind, Tom, you know, with a young team, guys come in, they think they're pretty good, and they are, and they don't take the practice quite like you would like. There's a development time. There's a time to switch people's attitude from kind of coasting in practice to playing every trip down the floor like it was your last one and paying attention. And I watched this. Cal was really into coaching. this team. I mean, he was not relying on anybody. He stopped practice. He was coaching. He was walking them through things. The majority, if not all of the guys, when Cal was talking, they were looking at him, paying attention. They weren't out wandering, which you have seen guys do. And I have seen guys. I probably did it myself, okay? But these guys all were paying attention. They were really trying to absorb, soak up what Calipari was saying. I was really impressed with that.
What did you see in Reed Travis?
You know, he's not a, like, great athlete, but it looks like he really knows how to play, knows how to use the body, very aggressive. I like the way he rebounded for a guy that's not going to get his rebounds because he's going to out-jump somebody. You know, he's an average jumper, but he does a nice job of getting places on the floor and can score the ball. I was very impressed.
Cal's a little bit like a football coach in that, you know, the football coach, you like to have that two deep at least at every position. So there's competition, you know, every day. Our buddy Jeff Van Note used to talk about the mindset in the NFL was that you had to win your job every day. And that seems on paper anyway what Cal kind of should have with this group, right?
It should, and that's going to create a great learning process for these guys. If you've got to compete every day for your job to keep it, let alone to acquire it, it'd make you a better player, a lot better player, versus just walking in and getting the starting position and then expecting to have it, not have to work to keep it, and then you end up going in a game and you're not mentally focused, you're not mentally ready, maybe, all the time to play and to do things. And I think, you know, this team is going to be pushed every day in practice, not just by Calipari and his staff, but by the players they are playing against. And that forces you to create good habits, not bad habits.
Mike, we're going to shift gears to the NBA a little bit. And the most recent story is that Hamidou Diallo gets a three-year deal for $4 million with OKC as a second-round pick. So, obviously, we're happy for him. Does that surprise you?
Well, I mean, that's $1 million a year, roughly, and that's, that is the pretty close to the minimum. So, I think they must want to really work with Hami, and it's good. I mean, that's all good. He'll spend time in the G League, but he'll go down on a big contract. And if he goes down, and, you know, that's a great start in his life, that young fella, great start.
Dakari, through a couple of trades, has ended up in Memphis. Do you know much about how that fit will be for him there?
Well, it looks like Dakari has carved out a spot as a backup guy. So I don't know much about Memphis's backup situation, but, you know, there's pretty good money in being the second or third big man on a team. You know, you make $1 million or more. And so I don't know what they have. But a big buyer every day at practice, working hard. I think that there's been a whole bunch of guys that have made a lot of money by being the second and third big man on a team. And the best situation possible would be to be in that slot, one of those two slots on a contender, right?
Yeah.
You get a playoff check. And, you know, now Memphis is not very good. So he should have a chance to prove himself and to see what he can do and earn a spot. Even if he does it, he's going to be a guy that's going to be in a backup role. He's going to get paid. How sweet is that?
And a guy that we always root for is Alex Poitras, and I see where he got a two-way deal with Atlanta. Explain to our listeners what that two-way deal means in the NBA.
Well, he is he could spend half his time in the G League and half his time in the NBA and be paid accordingly. The per game in each, the G League and the NBA, he'll earn that when he's playing. With Atlanta, he'll make a pro rata rate of a contract, and I don't know if he'll be on a minimum or what, but he'll have a pro rata for each game by game. And then if he's in the G League and he can split it 50-50, he can do like 41 games, or there could be more, and he would be paid a percentage of a G League contract. So he's going to get paid one way or the other, and what that means to him is that he's always going to have an opportunity to be called up front to the big team in case of injuries or trades or whatever. If he's playing well, he gets called up. And when he gets called up, he gets a bump in salary. So it's a good deal. The NBA is looking at this as a way that they can develop preferred players, people they think they just need time. They need coaching. And some teams need guards like that. Some teams need big men, and they'll stack their G League team accordingly. So a two-way contract is the way to go. I mean, a G League contract is not near as financially beneficial as a two-way contract.
But in addition to the financial, too, it kind of sounds like they have more of a, you know, interest in you. They definitely see something there that they want to protect a little bit.
Again, yeah, they're allowed two per team. So the guys who get the two-way contract are guys that they think need, as I mentioned, more coaching, more time spent working on certain situations, and people they know they can call up when needed, kind of like baseball or AAA, and they're good locker room guys. Maybe they're called up and really they're not going to be called up to play a lot, but they need to fill out a roster. Or maybe they're called up to play a lot, but they're good, solid people. They're people a team can trust by calling them up and not messing up somebody's chemistry, a team's chemistry.
At MikePratt22 on Twitter, and he joins us every Thursday here on the Leach Report. And next week we'll start to talk a little bit more about what Cal will be looking to accomplish down in the Bahamas. But for now, thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy.
Always good insight from Mike Pratt, and more of it coming next Thursday right here on the Leach Report. We'll be right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Get on a slice of Wildcat history. A couple of birthdays today, Kentucky football related. Mo Williams, one of the greatest running backs ever in Kentucky football history. He's in the discussion. Sonny Collins, probably those two are at the top of anybody's list. Benny Snell could well be in that mix, in that discussion after this season. Mike Archer, former Kentucky defensive coordinator, also celebrating a birthday today. As we said, it's the UK football kickoff luncheon today here in Lexington. Yesterday, Coach Stoops and his coordinators were down in Louisville for the annual kickoff luncheon there that the Jefferson County Alumni Chapter puts on. We heard from Coach Stoops and Coach Grant earlier. Let's hear from defensive coordinator Matt House talking about his star linebacker, likely first-round NFL draft pick, Josh Allen.
I think he's just like Mike. When he decided to come back, he came back for a purpose. And, you know, the conversation we've had with Josh, you can't let the outside noise, that doesn't determine how you play. You play to a personal standard, okay? And there's going to be, just like anybody, there's going to be games you play better than others, all right? But you can't ride the wave. And I think Josh understands that.
So that was Matt House talking about Josh Allen. Going to be fun watching Josh play this season. And football practices will commence next week. Fan days, a week from Saturday, so make sure you have that on your calendar. Coming up tomorrow, Daryl Bird's going to join us from the Cats Paws, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the stories out of their annual Cats Football, Cats Paws Football yearbook that is out. We'll see you then on the Leach Report Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report.